Good afternoon. Since I'm the last speaker and all that's keeping you from your refreshments, I'll try to be succinct. I want to acknowledge that this project was funded as part of the ERA research activities through CDC, and also acknowledge ICF Macro, who provide the support and make sure that we get our reports on time. And the data collection for the Missouri Cancer Registry is supported by a cooperative agreement between CDC and the Missouri Department of Health and Senior Services, and then a contract between DHSS and the University of Missouri. I'd also like to acknowledge two key staff, Suzanne Coulter and Chester Schmaltz, who are working on our special project number 3 to bring data directly from EHRs into the central registry. The purpose of the project is to improve annual case completeness and timeliness through innovative yet practical approaches that focus on importing data into the Central Cancer Registry from primary care and targeted specialty physician office EHRs, and also that it can be replicated or adapted by other CCRs, because Eric and I, Missouri and Kentucky, have the two demonstration projects. So we're trying to pave the way for other NPCR-funded states. All 43 of the others. My objectives today are to provide some background on my registry, to describe the project, explain the need for it, outline the steps for success to date and what our next steps are, and discuss how we're going to evaluate it. So we're a little older than Kentucky. We were established as a voluntary group in 1972 and mandated by the state in 1984, but that was for inpatient cases only. Well, you know, in 84, almost all cancer cases were treated in a hospital setting. How many of you have heard of the dioxin contamination, dioxin Agent Orange contamination at Times Beach? Well, that is how our registry came into being. And we limped along, having been established but not adequately funded, until CDC's NPCR came along in 1995 with our reference year of 1996. And we did not immediately seek to have it expanded because we needed to build bridges, mend fences, and establish a constituency to demonstrate why it is important to report cancer. You don't report it just because there's state law. You report it because we're in this together for better patient outcomes. And so we entered into a partnership with our reporting facilities. And our statute now covers all facilities diagnosing or treating cancer, but physicians are only required to report cases not referred elsewhere. Our initial focus back in 96 when I became the director was to focus on data quality, because you've got to have good quality going in, because if you allow that bad data, I won't say the word that I usually use since this is being recorded, you're always going to have that bad data. You can make up the time in timeliness and completeness, but you have to have a focus on quality. And then we wanted to use data for public health surveillance. That was our principal reason. That's why we're funded by NPCR. And we need to make the data available to the public and to health professionals at all levels of local, state, and national. Our website is actually the Department of Health and Senior Services website, because in 1999 we outsourced day-to-day operations of the registry to the University of Missouri, and the state wouldn't let me go at that time, but in 2002, when we thought we were getting tobacco settlement money, the state sent me to the promised land with a $150,000 advance to start a $1 million project on a county-level survey so that we could have our cancer incidence data, our cancer mortality data, and our chronic disease and preventive health practice data all available at the county level. And we have 115 counties in Missouri for a population of a little over 5.5 million. In 2000, our 1998 diagnosis year, we've met NPCR standards and received certification by the North American Association of Central Cancer Registries. I've already mentioned we were outsourced in 2002. Our advantages at the university were much stabler. We're not subject to the vicissitudes of politics and state health departments and hiring freezes. I'm on the faculty, so I have a voice at the table. We have greater access to graduate students and faculty. You know, graduate students, a lot of talent and not as expensive. We provide educational opportunities for our staff. This contributes to the stability of our staff. Turnover is one of the things that kills the Central Cancer Registry because there's a lot of technical skill involved. And we encourage our staff to participate in NPCR, NACER, and research activities. We liked, you know, we're the show me state. We like to be heard and we like to ask questions. We now have data available on our own website, and if you haven't seen it, I encourage you to look at it. And we have, one of our focuses is on innovation and on data security. Eric's already talked about the project period, so I'm not going to go into that. We identified potential sites as our first step. We received commitment from one key physician in the state who is well known to all other physicians, and we identified partners, Mohai Tech, Missouri Health Information Technology Assistance Center, which is Missouri's regional extension center. The feds don't like us to call it the REC, but if they didn't want it called the REC, they shouldn't have named it the regional extension center. And the Missouri Cancer Consortium, which is a broad spectrum of individuals and organizations interested in cancer throughout the state. And then I'm also a member of the Arrow Physician Office Clinic Work Group, the CPO. I've got it backwards that Wendy referenced. Our second steps were, we got excited. Our two projects are to improve race and ethnicity data quality in our database and to bring these cases from EHRs into the central registry. And our main reason for wanting to do that is, as has already been stated, increasingly, some cases are being diagnosed and treated entirely outside a hospital setting. So we knew that we were missing the prostate cancers, the melanoma skin cancers, which we are getting from dermatologists. We've been successful with them. And the leukemias and lymphomas. So our next step was to engage in strategic planning with our team and with our external partners. And we moved from being Missouri Cancer Registry to being the Missouri Cancer Registry and Research Center in January to better reflect our activities. And in a university setting, being a center, even if we're a small C center, conveys more visibility. We then reviewed our work plan, assigned existing staff, and started to hire new staff. And we're revising our work plan as needed. When we have submitted the application, we thought we would have to identify primary care EHR vendors, but the Missouri Health Information Technology Assistance Center on their website lists the meaningful use certified EHR vendors with which they are dealing. And so we are piggybacking along behind them and will select a sample of the dozen vendors and a sample of primary care physicians and specialist physicians and critical access hospitals, because the assistance center, in addition to being funded to pursue the primary care physicians, are also getting assistance to provide to critical access hospitals. Because with 115 counties, many of those are small, rural, less than 10,000 population, and we have 55 critical access hospitals in the state that currently report to us, but they report by sending us the charts, and we have to do the abstraction. We think it may be a much easier, faster way to do it if we can get their records. And then we prioritize our activities. I'm not going to go through all of what we do because we have limited time. You can read it there and see the slides. I've already mentioned this. I went to the HIMSS, Health Information Management System Society, annual meeting in Orlando this spring to meet with certified meaningful use vendors to look at their software and see what they had, how they were collecting it. And lo and behold, I found that you could be certified for meaningful use without having the multiple fields for race that we in cancer have. You could pass the test by just having one field as long as you had all the categories. But in race, you would have Hispanic. You could pass the test if you had Hispanic under ethnicity, but you could also have African-American under ethnicity. And they said, well, we can, some said, oh, you know, it's just adding fields, we can do that. Some said, well, we can put it in state added. No, this is a demonstration project, this needs to be standardized. And one said, you're crazy, you don't know what you're talking about, we're certified. So there is a difference in the vendors that are certified for meaningful use. We are also arranging for web-based demos of the ones that we will be working with. And I've mentioned this. Our second challenge, similar to what happened to Eric, we actually had a clinic volunteer. They wanted to be part of this. And then they found out that cancer was not in stage one, and so they withdrew. Any of you who have a voice, if we have convinced you today, please support inclusion of cancer in meaningful use stage two and pay attention to the public comment periods. We developed a brochure to describe this so that it could be included with the assistance center's materials that go to the providers. We redesigned our website. We have a space for this project, which will shortly be up. And we developed our evaluation plan and our process and outcome measures. So in the middle of this project, we had the opportunity to be one of three central registries to participate in a diagnostic imaging project. Kentucky was a second one, and the LA Cancer Registry was the first one. QuantumMark, funded by the National Cancer Institute, contracted with the Artificial Intelligence in Medicine to develop a diagnostic imaging software, and they needed needed central registries to test it. They wanted an NPCR-funded registry as their third site. And they had asked us a year ago, we couldn't participate at that time. They came back to us this summer and asked us, and we said, yeah, show me. Why not? Because we felt that while we are waiting for the physicians who have signed up for assistance from the assistance center to select their vendors, we could test bringing data from an alternative source into the central registry. As I mentioned when I answered your question, we already use the FinMS messaging system to bring in PathLab data electronically. We bring some PathLab data in electronically, directly, without going through the FinMS system. And we wanted to see, we just wanted some data and see if it would work. So the condition, we had to have a hospital so that the sending software could be installed in the hospital and the receiving software installed in the central registry. This was going to be streamed, but due to time constraints, we modified the project, and we had a data dump of text from all CAT scans and MRIs on central nervous system tumors for the calendar year 2009. We set up a separate database, and this is the same concept that we will use for special project number three. We won't bring any data directly into our main database. We will bring it in and put it in a temporary database as a holding pattern. Some of that data may eventually make its way into the central registry. Some of it may just stay there in this separate database until it is needed for another purpose. We extracted around 2,000 records, only 700 of which passed the filters for being potentially a cancer of interest. And it's estimated the specificity and sensitivity is at the moment exceeding 98%. We're hoping to get it up to over 99%. The analysis is currently underway, so I can't tell you how successful we have been, but I am excited because I think it really worked. I looked at it, and on CT scans and MRIs, you may get 6, 8, 10 for one patient. And we plan to use this data that we got from the radiology department of University Hospital for two ways. One is a case finding. They have already submitted all of their 2009 cases. Are there any that they should have submitted that they missed? Secondly, is there any information that was contained in the radiation department, radiology department, that wasn't included in the abstract that was created for the patient being seen in radiology that is needed in our main database. And by successfully doing this, we showed that DataDump provides alternatives to live streaming. And as Eric mentioned, we don't think that there's a one-size-fits-all. Yes, we want to go with a CDA, but for those that already have the HL7 version that they're using, the Path Labs, that may be the way to do it. Some, it may be more efficient based on the Central Registry's resources to do a data dump instead of having it come in real time, because generally we don't need it in real time. And we also use this project to test eMARC, the software that will be used for this project. And eMARC is Plus is part of CDC's Registry Plus suite of products. We use all of their products. The Link Plus, Registry Plus, the CRS Plus is our main database management software. Abstract Plus is what is used for abstracting cases. Web Plus is how we upload all cases except VA cases, which come in separately under MoveIt, a different software. And then Link Plus to find out if something you've brought in into an ancillary database is already in your database or is not. It worked. HL7, it worked like a charm. So our future activities are to bring on specialty physicians in critical access hospitals as well as the primary care physicians to receive and process data from these facilities, evaluate, and to prepare a final report. The process evaluation plan activities. Did we stick to our time frame, and were we successful in obtaining EHR data from the three categories that I have mentioned? Outcome. Our outcome is we hope that, and we know that we will improve the completeness, quality, and timeliness. May not improve much on timeliness overall, but the timeliness of acquiring some cases. And again, I mentioned the need for this is that there's a bias. We are missing certain types of cases. And we are missing possibly certain segments of the population. Rural that don't see an oncologist, they're treated in a local federally funded rural health clinic, perhaps an inner city clinic. They're treated by a primary care physician. And they may be referred to another facility, but they may not go. They may be falling through the cracks. We expect we will have a positive outcome. We will improve all of the quality, completeness, and timeliness. We think that we have set this up so that collaborations can continue beyond the funding picture. The big picture is that other NPCR-funded CCRs can adopt or adapt what we've done. We will reduce the number of missed cases and improve timeliness, which has implications for surveillance and comparative effectiveness research. And we hope to reduce disparities in population subgroups. Before I move on to the final, questions, I realized that I had left out one important slide. We've talked a lot about who we are and what we're doing and how we're going to go about doing it and what we hope to accomplish. But what we haven't done is say why. And the why is so that every person diagnosed with cancer can be counted. I've talked about the bias. And I want to read a statement that's on our website that we took from the Illinois Cancer Registry's hospital report in 92-93. Not one patient numbered here has been forgotten, not one family. These are the patients sorted this way and that, correctly and not, remembering and bidding to be remembered, to be counted well for their benefit and for those who come after. We always must keep in mind that behind every datum point, there is a person, and that person has a family, friends, a job, or a role, and society. If we do not count accurately and well, we all lose because every person needs to be counted, and we need to learn from that. Thank you very much for your attention today. Are there any questions? Was I that good or that bad? Thank you very much.
So I'd like to open it up for any questions for any of our three speakers today. So we have time. Anything? Okay.
I'd like to thank those of our loyal supporters out there in the audience who came and sat through this. It has been really exciting to work with this team and to be a part of the leading edge of what we are doing. I never thought when I became director that we would make this much progress. It may seem a long time at times, but to think that we have the technology has advanced to the point where we can talk about electronic reporting, and yet we still have many, many offices that are still working on paper. And we have to do more with less resources. And so to become more efficient but maintain the quality, the completeness, and the timeliness is the real challenge. And to have data available both for public health surveillance and for research is a challenge we constantly face.
You had mentioned that, you know, will the EMRs have the data elements that we need, and you specified the staging system that we use in cancer. And what we found is that the medical association associated with cancer, the American Society of Clinical Oncologists, has developed an EHR recommendation of what needs to be included. And so we went right to that document and looked, and it was included in there. So that is something that if you have a special specialty disease or health area, if there's a physician organization surrounding it, they have probably made efforts into what their EHRs ought to look like or the data elements, and you can look at that. So we're hopeful in the oncology clinics they will have that area, and that's where we would be getting that particular data.
Have you actually gone to, say, a latest greatest oncology office who's gotten the latest greatest electronic health record to see if the systems that are out there and being deployed actually meet our wants and needs?
We have not, and from my own personal, so this is changing my hat, so this is myself as my own company. The concern I would have is, as a consultant, if I go in as CDC and can we take a look at it, oh my goodness, we started, an issue here. We have talked with various vendors in the oncology clinic to talk with them and are inviting them into our clinician-physician office work group to talk about what they have there and then go in through the oncologists. I would guess that Eric has had some specific experience.
Yeah, well, we haven't had a chance yet, but that's exactly what we intend to do. We kind of feel like we're like the young ladies at the dance last night. We're all dressed up and ready to dance. We're dancing well with our own partners, and we're just waiting for another partner from the audience to come out and dance with us. So we feel like we're this close to having a signed agreement with a practice using eClinical Works, and at that point, that will give us the opportunity to go in and look exactly at what they're recording and to evaluate how appropriate it is for us.
I'm an outsider in this world, but as I recall, every year around the time of the EIS conference down here in Atlanta at CDC, there's a meeting of a big national meeting of all the oncologists, and I'm sure there's a multiplicity of EHR vendors trying to push EHR, so it would be one place where in a very non-invasive way, somebody could go by and query various vendors about to what extent they're incorporating some of the stuff that we would like to see incorporated if the recommendations from like the professional oncologists are actually getting deployed.
The vendors, there were, I think, over 100 vendors of EHR records at the HIMSS conference. They are coming out of the woodwork,
yep.
And they are not all created equal. And one of the challenges that the assistance center and other regional extension centers are facing is finding that they really are needed. This is a really worthwhile program because a physician office will think that they have purchased software that will do what they want, and then they find, Well, that's an add-on. You can't get that report out. You have to pay us another $5,000 or $50,000. And I don't want to say, I'm not being negative about vendors, but I'm just saying that many of us are not as technically experienced or proficient as Eric or Wendy might be. And so we need to know what are the right questions to ask in order to get the product that we want. And as far as we are concerned, if we are, while we want everything, if our mission, core mission is public health surveillance, there are a lot of things we'd like to have, but we have to have the demographics, we have to have the tumor information. We'd like to have a lot of other things, but we've got to have stage, because how can you measure progress for your breast and cervical cancer control program if you don't know whether you're moving breast cancer from stage 3 to stage 2 and hopefully down to stage 1? So we can always follow back if we get the case. So to me, it is more important to start with, let's find the cases, let's identify. We just have estimates. We really don't know what we're missing.
Understood.
Because we're missing it.
Understand. None of us are going to argue with you.
And
that's a good point. Obviously, we need the core basic case definition stuff that allows us to count cases and some demographics. And getting some risk factors is
right, and risk factors is very important, because if you don't know what the screening prevalence is, you don't know, I mean, screening prevalence or preventive health measures can tell you a lot about why you have a certain problem. And it may identify, the public always thinks that it's the radioactive waste site or the toxic waste dump. They never want to look at the prevalence of cigarette smoking or obesity or the lack of MAMs and PAPs on a regular basis. I just want to say one more thing, and that's about another way of getting data. Some of the, for example, in Missouri, federally funded health clinics are talking about forming a data warehouse. I had approached someone to say, we would like to have one or two federally funded clinics in this pilot project, and this was the person at the assistance center coordinating this, and she said, well, wouldn't you like to have 22? And I said, sure, but I don't have the resources to pursue 22. And she said, well, we are considering setting up a data warehouse. Does it have to come directly to you? Could it go from the clinic to the warehouse and then to you? Fine, as long as I get the case, I don't care how I get it.
Great. So are there any other questions? Right here.
Thanks. That was very interesting. And I have some ill-thought-out questions, so forgive my naivete, but I actually have a small project that I work on with the Kentucky Cancer Registry and several other registries. And one question I had is, do you think that this could be a valuable opportunity to get more timely basic missing information through the probability linkage, like race information? If you're able to, you might not get that from the initial record, but the diagnostic record, but then if there's treatment or other follow-up in other clinics, do you think that it might be possible to get it that way in a timely manner?
One of the nice things that, well, the way registries have operated in the past is we wait till the patient has left the hospital and the hospital's done all other work. The registrar puts all her good work into that, and we have a 6 to 8 month delay. And our data is primo. We've got one of the highest quality data, and we're complete, but we aren't very timely. And so now with the pathology reporting, in addition to these incomplete, the cases we're missing, by getting that data, we have the basic who's got the cancer and what kind is it. And if we can change our methodology, so as soon as they have left the hospital and as soon as the physician has seen them, whichever area they're seeing, they send us that initial piece, and then we get their address and we can get their race. And so now we filled in, where the area is, and we've got the stage, and then we can wait for the 6 months or 8 months to get through the radiation chemotherapy. So this multiple cycle of reporting is new to us. It's scary to us. And the tools that CDC, I know we had the town hall meetings and there was CDC help us out. This particular program of National Program of Cancer Registries has helped out by providing tools for us and can be used elsewhere for the linkage, so we don't count the patient more than one, edits to make sure it's clean, and there are other pieces to process electronically. So this multiple reporting will be helpful.
Yeah, because rapid reporting for special projects is really resource intensive.
I'd like to follow up on that. In order to be a certified registry, to meet NPCR standards or to be certified by NACER, you can only have 2 to 3% missing or unknown race. Ethnicity at the moment is not included in certification. The problem for the hospitals have provided race more frequently than physician offices. We have to educate physicians, all providers, on the need to capture accurate data on race and ethnicity. There was a politically correct period when many hospitals took it off the face sheet, and cancer registrars have to go looking through physician notes and social work notes, et cetera, to find it. As part of our race and ethnicity improvement project, we are educating, we're going to be surveying, and then a training module, but we've done two linkage projects. And we started looking at our own data, and we have over 1 million records. We took every patient that had more than one race and ran them to see if they followed the reporting standard, which is minority race takes precedence over white, and Hawaiian takes precedence over any other minority race. And I can't tell you the exact number of individuals that had more than one race, but we had one error. And that was a case that was reported as Asian Pacific Islander NOS first, Hawaiian second, and that's the reverse order. We called the hospital to verify, and that was correct, but alarmingly, there was a third race, white, and their software would not transmit a third race. We haven't had time to check and see whether that's a vendor-specific problem or just a hospital problem, but it's the multiracial categories that are cause for concern, because we are, as a nation, we are having more and more people with multiple races, and some facilities do the eyeball instead of asking what is your race. They look at you and record it, and we have instances on ethnicity. Missouri's a state that has had a 300% increase in Hispanic ethnicity, which brings them up to less than 3% of the total population. But we have vendors who are facilities that have their software set as Hispanic no or Hispanic unknown because they don't expect to see any. This is an area where change and improvement is needed.
You know, I'm Tom Safranik, but I'm the state epidemiologist in Nebraska, and most of my work has been with NEDS and electronic lab reporting, syndromic surveillance, that kind of thing. But I'm totally fascinated by coming to this cancer registry session. This thing about race, ethnicity, it's fascinating. You know, we've struggled, and I've almost felt like we've given up to try and go back to our hospitals and say, would you please rigorously include race, ethnicity, you know, in your reporting of reportable diseases or embedding it in your routine business and making sure it's rigorously collected. And then you're relying on your admissions clerk to query and get it all right. And I don't know. I think a lot of us maybe have, you might say, given up a little bit. But what I'd like to plug is there's a renewed, or I guess a new interest in the person's address at the time of residence, which can then be mapped to a census tract block. Mm-hmm. And a census tract block is literally a city block with 100 people on it with a bevy of information about, you know, percent of people on that block of a given race or something like that. There's a way to get at race ethnicity by getting patient address and mapping it to census tract block. And it also allows us to get at what may be a bigger determinant of health than race ethnicity, and the ultimate determinant is socioeconomic status, by mapping to census tract block. And we're privileged in public health to be able to get personal identifiers, including patient address. And so to get, I would almost be more excited to hear that you were pursuing a rigorously precise patient address at the time of diagnosis, yeah. Which would help us in the long run I think, in getting at true risk factors, et cetera.
Yeah, and we do that routinely, as a matter of fact. We routinely geocode our data, and there are numerous studies of using cancer data and linking it with contextual variables such as socioeconomic status. So that's something that we do on a routine basis.
Patient address.
National requirement.
Yep.
Right. Yes.
Yeah.
In PCR.
Right. And within the CDA, to get back to that and cover informatics for a second, we have the capability of doing an address history. CDA provides a address, and I can't remember the terms now, but low value, high value, so that for this address you're here to here, and so we can start cancer, you know, collecting where they are now does not tell us anything about any environmental causes. So we have that capability. And again, the HIEs are going to really help us on this because people move around for their health care. And so we'll be able to put this to see that even as the National Health Information Network, and I'm an optimist, I think it's going to happen, we can track through that. So for public health, where we have some of this area, and I see some shaking heads, they must not be optimists, but a quick thing, we met with the Brazilians and we talked about race, and they said they have it very easy. And so we said Hispanic, non-Hispanic, and she says, no, we have a book of pictures. Are they black? Are they brown? Are they yellow? All the others. And we're just cringing to hear, are they yellow or are they brown? So we've all got the problems with describing race.
I think, is there a question right here?
Right.
No.
When you say you have the capability for address history, can you explain a little more about that? Do you have to go to a special database or a vendor or whatever it is to get that?
No, we were surprised when we started asking because we thought this was going to be very difficult. And the EHR vendors, you talk to the vendors, and they keep track of this patient changed their address today when they came in. So they have the old address, they have the next this address. And you come in, you change it again, they have filed all those paths. So they have the data, and CDA has the capability to record that to show 10, 12 addresses.
But just to comment on that, in the current Central Cancer Register, most of us probably don't have the capacity to store that sort of historical address information at this time.
Hospitals are very cognizant of this. They know that that's how we collect it. So we have address at diagnosis and current address. And physician offices, their current software, some of them, because they're interested in billing, they're interested in where you are now. So we have to be very careful to make sure that that address history is retained. Then for research purposes or for tracking, we need to update the current address. And we have, because we're at a university, we can pay $20 and get 10 or 10,000 or 100,000 addresses checked, verified, to update the current address. But how we're going to store and retain that history is still a problem to us.
Okay. So we have, Joe has a comment, and there's one more question, Sam.
My name is Joe Rogers. I'm in the Cancer Surveillance Branch.
Mike, to your mouth.
Sorry.
This may be off.
A little bit closer to your...
This is Joe Rogers. I'm in the Cancer Surveillance Branch at MPCR. I was going to say that somewhere down the road, I think that we're going to be linking our personal health records with the EMR or EHR, and my thought is that information for both, we're actually being pushed to get occupation history included in the cancer registry along with race, ethnicity, and also these address, histories of address included. That might be an option for us as in public health to actually get that information somewhere down the road if we do have an opportunity to do that linkage.
And one last question, I think.
Catherine Skenk-Iglesias, and I work at Johns Hopkins in International Health, but one of the articles I read must have been over a year ago, Bill Davenhall, who's at Esri, was writing exactly about a position statement, I think, about locational history, especially in relation to cancer. And so one of my colleagues at Hopkins has now been talking about publishing and looking at the data model for doing address history and including geospatial data. And we, of course, have talked about it's not only where you live but where you work, so I'm glad you brought up the occupational history as well. But it does seem like in the informatics field it's something that we should push ahead as far as defining what the fields are and how you would represent that in a database, because you could live somewhere for 6 months or a year. People with, especially with different jobs, could be, you know, temporary workers here for 3 months and there for 6 months, depending on their occupation, right? So I do think that it's really the informatics community that can move that forward, because specifying how it's held, just like with race and ethnicity, is half the battle, and then standardizing from there. So I'm glad we're talking about this.
Thank you. So I'd like to now just thank our three speakers for wonderful presentations. So thank you.